Hi, this is Nick Brown, author of Werewolf for Hire, Book One, Blood Curse, and you're listening to the Seventh Star Press Podcast.
Hello, 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 and welcome to the second edition of the Seventh Star Press Podcast. And we kicked off things there with a little bit from the band Zero King. My friends in Zero King, thanks a lot for that music. And in today's episode, we have a very special guest who I first met at the Hypericon convention in Nashville, Tennessee. And this past weekend, I actually had the opportunity to see him again when I was in town for a signing at Borders for the Exodus Gate. I'd like to thank William and the Borders family for hosting me and providing great, great hospitality. And then also, I'd also like to mention the folks at Fright Night Film Fest and Ken Daniels for the rest of the weekend when I went to Louisville. But anyway, while I was in Indianapolis, I got to see our guest, and he was at Gen Con, and he has got an amazing, amazing creation. The best way to describe it is that it's actually potentially franchises. And so there's any animation studio people out there or anybody with a toy company out there, just to put it bluntly, if they're smart enough to pick up on what this guy has to offer, they stand a chance of making a whole lot of money, because I can see every kid in my neighborhood wanting one of the a toy line of this kind of stuff, and I can see, you know, adults buying graphic novels and novels by the droves with this guy's creation. His name is John Clement, and he is the creator of the Smertiverse, which is a whole superhero universe that includes pocket dragons, which are just immensely creative little creatures. And John and I have talked several times, and each time I get a greater appreciation for just the depth and scope of what he has. A lot of his fans have actually used the term, and it's their words, not his. He's a very humble guy, but they've actually compared him to an early stage Stan Lee. That's the kind of extent and depth that he has in the universe that he's created. And the potential is enormous. I mean, everything from feature films to graphic novels to comic books to toy lines to, you know, Saturday morning cartoons. I mean, something for everybody. I mean, it's really is an amazing creation. And in today's interview, we're going to be visiting with John and getting a little bit of an insight into the Smertiverse and everything around it, even including his upcoming webisode series involving Black Lotus, one of the characters who will be played by the actress Wei He. And John will actually be having his fourth novel in released this fall at Archon, the great convention out there in St. Louis, which I also will be attending. And so here in a second, we're going to get John on the phone here, and we're going to go into the whole Smertiverse, and we hope you enjoy this interview. I'd like to welcome John Clement, the creator of the Smertiverse and the Pocket Dragons, to the Seventh Star Press Podcast. Welcome to the show, John.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
And probably the first question for our audience is, what exactly is the Smertiverse and what are Pocket Dragons? So give us a little background and insight into your world.
All right. Well, Smerd is the name of the premier Pocket Dragon character, sort of flagship character, and so the Smertiverse basically is the universe where stories happen, where the Pocket Dragons and their cohorts adventure. So what the Pocket Dragons are then, Pocket Dragons are from space. They're not people fantasy magical creatures. They're more like aliens, but they're draconic in nature, and they create a pocket world inside the clothes of a symbiotic partner. They'll take a little bit of your life force. You'll never miss it. It's like the equivalent of maybe smoking one cigarette. You know, maybe shorten your life by maybe 2 minutes or something like that. But they take a little bit of your energy, because I'm a science geek and I was a chemistry teacher for 8 years. So even in fiction, I want the laws of thermodynamics to be obeyed. You don't get something for free. So they take take a little bit of your life force, whatever that means in mystical life force terms, normal terms, and they make a pocket world inside the pocket of their host. And this pocket world is where they keep their treasure, because even though they're tiny little dragons, they have full-size dragon hoarding instincts. So your pockets, if you're the symbiotic partner, what you get out of the deal is your pockets will suddenly work like Santa Claus's stack, or Mary Poppins' bag, or a bag of holding if you're familiar with Dungeons & Dragons, or just like a cartoon character sack, something like that. You would be able to stuff a small motorcycle into your pants pocket. A pocket dragon can, on all of your pockets, become connected, including purses, bags, laptop cases, backpacks. So a pocket dragon can jump in your pants pocket and come out the top of your backpack if you're wearing one, or jump into your jacket pocket and then appear in your laptop case or something like that. So they have this interconnected world. The inside of the world is something like an M.C. Escher painting. There's stairways going everywhere. There's subjective gravity. Smurd has a room that will be in the fourth Velocity Girl novel, where the ceiling is his swimming pool and the floor is his kitchen if you enter one way. If you enter by a different door, then the floor is the swimming pool and the ceiling is the kitchen. But pocket dragons have they have their treasures there, and each pocket dragon has a different personality. They bond with a host that has a personality that complements them in some way, or they complement the host in some way. And each pocket dragon has a little different idea of what treasure is. So Smurd's treasure is basically food. But he has, there are other pocket dragons. There's a pocket dragon named Melody. Her idea of treasure is music. So in her pocket dimension, there are ballrooms. She's got everything from old scratchy records to ancient musical instruments to computers with modern MP3s. There's a pocket dragon, Smurd's girlfriend, Roxy. Her idea of treasure is maps. So she has maps of other planets, other dimensions, everything ancient, scrolls like you'd find in a museum, all the way up to computerized files, just everything.
Well, it's an extensive universe, and you know, you're actually an easy guy to find at cons, because you can see Smurd poking out of your pocket on your shirt, and you know, you're always the guy wearing the funny hat too. And, you know, and with that, you know, as far as, like, you know, the recent cons that you've been to, like Gen Con and so forth, you do have a gamer background, and that was sort of foundational for you. So maybe you could tell us a little bit about how your gaming background kind of served as kind of a foundation or launch pad for your Smurdiverse.
Well, sure. I started, let's see, I'm 38 now, and I started playing Dungeons & Dragons when I was 11. And pretty much, I always wanted to be a writer, and that writing passion pretty much got turned into writing adventures for player characters. And a lot of my influences were cartoons and science fiction shows, movies, and so I started to think episodically, taking a group of adventurers and taking them through the year. They grew and changed and developed. In the 80s and 90s, when I was in high school and college, Star Trek Next Generation was on and ran for 7 years, and could actually kind of watch the characters kind of grow and change. There'd be an episode about Geordi where he failed to get a girlfriend again, and there'd be an episode about Data where he would once again not fail to realize that he was human. He just couldn't see the forest for the trees and his continuing quest to be more human. And then a Worf episode where we're going to delve and explore the Klingon culture a little more. But the thing is, I started doing this with player characters, and I started doing this with my stories, thinking about a group evolving through the years. And while I was playing D&D and kind of developing my story-making skills, some of my players were fascinated with small dragons. And I found the small dragons in a D&D game to be very unsatisfying. The pseudo-dragon from Monster Manual 1, the pocket dragon from the Creature Crucible, they couldn't even talk, they couldn't speak, and they certainly weren't pocket-sized, not even the one that was called the pocket dragon. It was the same size as the pseudo-dragon. You kind of draped it over your shoulders like a shawl. And what came to my mind immediately was pocket dragons the way I portray them. And so I started using mine instead of the ones that were actually in the D&D books, and they were very popular. And then I started writing the superhero series, the first for Velocity Girl. The first one came out, actually she was called Rush back then. The first one came out in 2005. By the time 2007 comes around, I'm writing the third one, and I decided I needed more comedy relief, I needed more fun, some more silliness, some more spontaneity, And so I put Smurd the Pocket Dragon in there from my old D&D days, and he just took off. Velocity Girl and her heroic cohorts were doing fine at conventions and everything for 2 years, but all of a sudden Smurd comes along, blows up the water. He's got more fans in 6 months than the other characters had in 2 years, and I think that's partly because there's a glut of superhero stuff out there right now, and it's been going for several years, and it's still up there to some extent. Smallville's still on TV, NBC's Heroes is still on TV, but we had Superman Returns, we had a couple Batman movies, we've had some very silly movies like Zoom and Mystery Men. I mean, this superhero boom has lasted for many, many years, and so there's a big glut of superhero things out there, and I think that that's part of the reason why my superheroes are good, and there's no doubt about it. I believe in them wholeheartedly, but that's why the Pocket Dragons just overshadowed them, because everyone needs to laugh, and Smurd has fans that aren't even necessarily fans of superheroes or comic books, but they laugh at Smurd, just because he's got that tongue-in-cheek humor, and he's got a little fresh, kind of innocent, childlike alien perspective on life, and you can just take very dramatic situations or just things from real life that we kind of take for granted and just kind of open them up in his little childlike eyes.
And speaking of your fans and the fans of Smurd and so forth, these are not your words, but actually the words of some of your fans. They've kind of compared you to a budding Stan Lee with your development of the Smurdiverse. And if you were called that, why do you think that they would compare you to Stan Lee in terms of your Smurdiverse? Where do you think that would come from?
Well, I'm very flattered when they say that. I just hope they never say that at a convention where Stan Lee's actually there.
Right.
But I think what they mean, and a lot of my fans, especially here locally in St. Louis, have become my friends. So it's really blurred, and there's really no differentiation here in St. Louis a lot of times between fan and friend. They started as a fan, and then they became my friend because we're so local. We see each other all the time. But I think what they mean is that the Smurdiverse is very diverse, like DC and Marvel. There's martial arts, there's Asian mysticism, there's science fiction things happening on other planets out in space. There's just straightforward, super-powered stuff, and now there's these pocket dragons, which can be taken to a little kid level, like the ABC book, or they can be taken as more serious characters that you could put in the mainstream products for people of our level of sophistication, with the humor and everything. So there's just so much going on in terms of the villains and the heroes, and there's all sorts of stories haven't even been touched on yet, in terms of haven't even been put into print yet. It's just a huge evolving expanse of a universe. It's not, I think what they mean is, it's not like I just came out with one or two characters and now I'm trying to push them. It really is the totality of the entire Smurdiverse.
Yeah, that's one of the things that struck me, actually, when I first encountered you at Hypericon, is just the depth and the extent of your Smurdiverse. That's so impressive. And right now, what forms can people experience the Smurdiverse in, as far as like web comics or books and things of that nature?
Well, there is a web comic. It's Smurdiverse.com. That's Smerd, Smurd with a D, Iverse, Smurdiverse.com. The webcomic currently is between artists. It has not been up. There's extensive archives that you could read right now if you went there right now. It hasn't been updated lately. We hope to start updating it in a few weeks. I'm kind of narrowing down which artist is going to take up the mantle next of the Smurdiverse webcomic artist. The novel series, Velocity Girl, is Smurd's current host. She is a St. Louis superheroine. She was 15 years old in the book. She's now 17, and she is, for the first two books, you won't find Smurd, so I want to be upfront about that because he wasn't part of the universe yet. Velocity Girl finds him in the third book, and he becomes a major figure in the fourth book because he's just exploded, and you got to give fans what they want,
Oh, yeah.
The Velocity Girl series currently has three novels, and the fourth one will be ready for Archon, which is the first weekend of October. You can find them on my website. You can find them on Amazon.com. You can find them in some of the local Barnes & Nobles and Borders in the St. Louis area. And, of course, you can also get them from me at conventions, which, of course, would be the best way because you don't pay shipping.
Yeah, and you do actually maintain a pretty thorough convention schedule, because I know you, encountered you recently in Indianapolis at Gen Con and met you at Hypericon, and you're going to Archon, but you do maintain a pretty heavy schedule. I've noticed that.
I maintain an average of one a month. Some months there aren't any, but then there's other months where there's two or three, so it averages out to one a month, so it's about 12 a year.
It's pretty impressive, definitely pursuing it on an independent level at this point. You also want to touch on this, even though it's not directly related to books and press and so forth. But you are moving forward with your Black Lotus webisode series with the actress Wei He. Go ahead and tell our audience a little bit about that project.
Okay, well, basically, Black Lotus is one of the major villains in the Smurdiverse. She's a major villain in the first book, first Velocity Girl novel. She's also a major villain in the fourth one that's being released for Archon in October. And at Archon 31, I think, maybe Archon 32. Well, we're going to have Archon 33 here this October. I met Wei He, and Wei He is a costume goddess. She has a huge following of her own on MySpace and Facebook. She's extremely impressive. She's 17 years old and just graduated high school, really has her act together, and I was a high school teacher for 8 years, so this is where I sort of start to think, I'm really impressed with a teenager that has their act together like this. But she's been accepted to the University of Kansas City, Missouri. She starts classes tomorrow as a costuming major in the theater department, and costuming is her passion. So at this point, I mean, we'd like to see her be an actress, because she's just the perfect Black Lotus, but to be honest, at this point, she'd probably describe herself more as a costumer than an actress, although we hope that changes. But for 4 years, she's been going to different anime conventions, Anime St. Louis, NakaCon, and several others, Kawakon, and she's been appearing as different famous anime characters. And she's got such a huge following now. I mean, her costumes are good. She's always trying to one-up herself. She's always trying to do something better than what she did last time. It's like the passion of her life. And so she came to Anime St. Louis this past spring, 2009, as Black Lotus. And she couldn't get more than 5 or 10 feet on the convention floor without somebody stopping to take her picture. And at first it was very flattering, and then it just became annoying, because she couldn't walk from one end of the convention center to the other without it being kind of a hassle. But people would ask, hey, who's that character? You know, I don't recognize that character. And I would be wearing my Smurd shirt, and I'd be just kind of, that's one of mine. And it was great. And then we came up with this idea that since Black Lotus is a martial artist, she's an assassin. Imagine if Laura Croft was evil and Asian and killed people for money. That's kind of like Black Lotus, just maybe a glimpse of what she's like. Well, obviously we've got this very attractive woman. Anti-heroes or even villains are big right now. So we just kind of got this inspiration. I'm not sure which one of us did, whether it was me or one of my artists or one of the fans even. Somebody mentioned it, but it just caught on, took on a life of its own. The idea is that since she's a martial artist and an assassin, we don't have to be Hollywood to make a movie with her. We don't have to create CGI pocket dragons. We don't have to have people flying, even though it's a superhero world. We don't have to have lightning or fire coming out of somebody's hands. We could actually do a respectable film with a non-Hollywood budget. And so it just kind of, we approached with the idea. I wrote a script, and it kind of grew from there. And we're thinking of it being in terms of webisodes, kind of like NBC's Heroes does or BattlestarGalactica.com did. 1 to 3 minute vignettes that kind of string, about 10 of them that string together to make a story arc. And we will have the teaser trailer available at Archon, and Wei He will be there as Black Lotus signing autographed pictures.
I think you've hit the right timing, because I cover this a little bit on my work with Indie Movie Masters podcast, another podcast, but webisodes are just about to explode. I mean, I know a lot of the independent film community and all are really embracing the whole webisode concept, And episodic type formats, I think, will play really well with your whole Smurdiverse series. And I would also comment that the poster for Black Lotus is really striking. And I know you can see a copy of that on your website, which probably you should spell out your website for the Smurdiverse, just so people get that accurately.
Right, not a problem. S-M-E-R-D, D is in Dragon, that's Smurd's name, I-V-E-R-S-E, Smurdiverse.com.
And you also maintain some social networking contacts as well. We probably could go ahead and mention those while we're giving the web address.
Right there at Smurdiverse.com, and I'll also mention them separately as well. But right there at Smurdiverse.com in the navigation bar, you can find links to Smurd's Facebook, MySpace, and Twitter. So Smurd's Facebook would be facebook.com/JohnClement, J-O-N, no H in John, K-L-E-M, as in Mary, E, N as in Nancy, T. Be Smurd's Facebook. Smurd's MySpace is myspace.com/SmurdThePocketDragon. We changed the spelling of pocket. Pocket would be P-C-K-I-T. And the reason for that is because, we're not the first people to come up with the idea of small pocket-sized dragons that would fit in your pocket. And so, and just to differentiate ours and make sure that we're clear that ours are different, ours generate pocket worlds inside your pockets, and they're actually from space, from more of a science fiction setting, and all those other little differences, we went ahead and just changed the spelling. So the you still say Pocket Dragon, but the spelling reflects more of the alien language that they would have.
Yeah, like I say, pocket with an apostrophe. So, I also wanted to mention, while we're on the subject of your website and so forth, is that you do have a series online of web comics, and I noticed that you have guest artists and so forth available there as well.
Right, and as I mentioned before, right now the web comic is not being updated. There's the extensive archive. There's plenty of stuff there now that people could get into now if they went there now. Right now, I'm whittling down the last few prospects and sort of negotiating time commitments and how much money they want and stuff like that. And in the next 2 to 3 weeks, I hope to have it nailed down who's going to actually be wearing the mantle next of the Smurdiverse webcomic artist, and actually have that spot filled again. And then we'll be back updating. I want to definitely be updating by Archon.
So how many artists do you work with right now with your various Smurdiverse imagery? How many are in your fold, so to speak?
Well, let's see, the original artist who set the look, if you look at most of your Smurdiverse art, the original guy who set the look for the Smurdiverse, his name is Roberto Dacdao. He lives in the Philippines. I've never met him personally. The internet's just a great thing. My first publisher lives in Winnipeg, Canada. I never met him personally either. Roberto was recommended by my first publisher, A.P. Fuchs in Canada. And it was basically through the internet that all these connections originally, and then I started making connections at conventions. And I remember one time about a year ago, my wife was just really amazed. She said, John, how do you know all these people? And I said, well, I've been going to conventions for 2 years. If I don't know people by now, I'm doing something wrong.
Well, we can definitely say that you're officially an international operation then.
Right. Now the next few artists started working with me. Mike Cole is an extremely talented cartoonist. Won awards at lots and lots of conventions. I met him at Archon, and he lived a mile from my house at the time. I've moved since then, but he lived a mile from my house, and so I was working with a guy in the Philippines and a guy who was that I was never going to meet except over Skype or email. And then I was also working with a guy a mile from my house that I could go have a Coca-Cola with, and there have been a few other artists from time to time that I've worked with. There's another gentleman who did, there's two Black Lotus posters, actually. There's one that's based on a photograph by Mike Cole, and then there's one that's more freehand comic book cartoon style by Herbert Richardson. And he lives in South Carolina, and he is just fantastic, too.
So, just looking, we're getting close to the end here, so I just want to just peek forward a little bit ahead. What is coming up? You got your fourth novel, of course, at Archon, and we touched on that a little bit earlier, but what is coming up in maybe 2010, early 2010 for you?
Well, probably, it's been about one a year, and they've been pretty well received, the Velocity Girl novels, the mainstream novels. Probably in Velocity Girl 5, I already have some ideas for what that could be. Actually, I have some pretty solid ideas for what that could be. And then we'll have to see what happens with, Black Lotus. It looks like she's, that character is going to become popular enough. She might need her own novels. We're going to have the webcomic will be updated regularly. We'll be releasing our first graphic novel. The second little kids book, Smurred Shapes and Colors, comes out at Christmas. So sometime in 2010, there'd be a third little kids book, because those are selling better than the novels right now. Because little kids really... us older fans, we have jobs and bills, and we have to we have kids, so we're paying jobs, bills, kids, gas in the car, all that kind of stuff. If you look at the industry, the money's in little kids stuff, and I don't mind. I was a teacher for 8 years, so it shifts me into a little different gear, and it's kind of nice to do the kid stuff.
And plus, you got your own built-in test audience under your own roof there.
Neat to see Smurdiverse hero posters on my kids' walls right next to Superman and Batman and Wonder Woman and Spider-Man, and then my kid finds these superheroes have equal weight. So that was pretty awe-inspiring the first time that happened. And my kids came home from school and they were talking about playground conversation with other kids, and they were talking about their favorite superheroes, and they were talking about my superheroes, and this was early on, really early on, and nobody had heard of my superheroes yet, and they were like, "What do you mean? Who's so-and-so?" My kids were really my first fans, and they will always be that spot.
Well, I think there's going to be many more. Actually, I can see it in the future. There's going to be a lot of people getting into rumbles over Smurd and the gang at around Christmas time in toy stores. It's going to happen someday, and I know I just want to be on record as saying that first. So anyway, as a final question, is there anything else that you'd like to leave it kind of open to you to comment on as far as the Smurdiverse or any of the other projects you're doing?
Well, just look for what's coming, because it's big. We've got, and we're pretty, they say it, I'm a member of the St. Louis Publishers Association, and we have a saying there that if you listen to fans, they'll tell you what they want. And so we've been, pretty responsive. I mean, I could have been very rigid and stuck to my original vision and said, no, this is a superhero universe, and I could have been a purist. But I was open-minded and flexible, and when I realized that Smurd here actually had a little different message that, it's something kind of on his own. I was open-minded enough to go, kind of let my fans lead a little bit and tell me what, tell me what they want. And then I kind of look at my vision and it's really kind of a harmonious thing.
Well, all right. Well, that'll probably wrap it up there. So we've really enjoyed having you, John. You're a first-class guy. I can't say enough about how creative the Smurdiverse is, and it's going to happen. I mean, people definitely need to take note of your work and what you're doing. So we're definitely going to have you on again at some point, because there's so much to cover, and we can't possibly have covered it just in this half-hour show. So we're definitely looking forward to having you again. So thanks a lot, John, and we appreciate you.
Listening can come find me at a convention anytime. So just tell me you heard me on Steve's show.
All right. Well, take it easy, man.
Okay. Thanks, Steve.
So there you go, folks. John Clement, creator of the Smurdiverse, and we hope you have a better idea of the breadth and depth of his great creative universe, and of course the world of Pocket Dragons. And it's always good to be having an artist from St. Louis as well, because I don't know if a lot of people know, but actually when I was a little kid, I lived for a brief time in the fine city of St. Louis, and I'm looking very much forward to going back there this fall to Archon. So thank you for joining us today on the second edition of the Seventh Star Press podcast, and we look forward to having you joining us next time. And so we're going to take you out with a little bit from the band Spent, from their new album Scars, with the song Breaking Down. Take it easy and keep rocking.